Welcome to VHTB, your guide to talent, culture, and the finance side of space startup ecosystem. My name is Justice Killian. I'm a partner at Space Capital, and I'm joined by Matt Jurtzen from Better Everyday Studios.
Hello.
And Seika Major from Ad Astra Talent Advisors.
Hello.
So there's been a lot of attention over the last, I would say, 6 months to a handful of companies that have been going through major leadership changes. Most relevant and most sort of timely is Relativity Space, who had Eric Schmidt come in, a transition in as CEO. And so the topic that I was particularly excited to explore today is what a transition of a founder and a CEO looks like in a venture-backed startup. In particular, what does it mean for the team that, you know, is residing in the organization? What challenges does it create? What opportunities does it create? And are there some practical ways to sort of navigate that environment? And so just to sort of set some additional context, you know, from an investor's perspective, you know, we have seen, you know, over long periods of our sort of investment cycle that CEO swaps can be very risky and potentially costly, you know, for us as investors. So as a result, you know, when we're going in and doing diligence, oftentimes we're looking at CEOs to say, you know, is this somebody that can, you know, scale or develop as a leader and sort of wear the multiple hats and sort of transform into the multiple roles that a founder journey requires. So, you know, hopefully you can avoid these transitions. And when I look at some of the top performers in our portfolio, you know, maintaining continuity at that founder and CEO level is quite important. So, you know, you've got SpaceX and they've had, you know, long tenure, particularly in the early years across their senior leadership, Rocket Lab, Planet, ICEYE, Hawkeye 360, Muon Space. You know, these folks have built a strong founding team. There's been continuity over, you know, multiple years, and you know, they've really been able to adapt and evolve over the role. But you know, that isn't necessarily what happens in most cases. Noam Wasserman, perhaps he's best known for his 2012 book, The Founder's Dilemma. And it's really this like deep dive into anticipating and avoiding the pitfalls that you could sink into in startups. And, you know, he looked at 10,000 startups, and he showed that CEO transitions are actually remarkably common with startups. So 25% of companies replace their CEO by the time they reach Series A. That was surprising to me. That was way more than I was expecting. And that number jumps to over 60% have changed CEO by the time they raise their Series D. So it is actually the norm over a longer period of time that, you know, the founding CEO will transition. And in fact, nearly a quarter of those Series D transitions were onto their third CEO at that point. So this is something that really any sort of person in a leadership journey, you know, looking to be a part of startup should be familiar with and should be sort of able and willing to embrace. And so, you know, I think the context that I want to sort of frame this in is, what does this mean for companies, managers, and the broader team as a, you know, major founder and CEO transition takes place? I have some initial thoughts, but I've been talking for a while. So does anybody else have some initial thoughts out of the gate, or should I tee those up?
I definitely would love to jump in here because I've gotten to work with a couple organizations after major leadership changes like this. And it was really interesting. And kind of actually one of the reasons I was brought in was to kind of help settle the unsettledness of the organ after that change. I think obviously a lot of what happens is going to be kind of the reasons why there was that leadership change. That's going to have a profound effect. But in this in the particular case where I'm thinking that comes first to mind to me is there was a very deliberate attempt to kind of change the relationship between the executive leaders and the employee base. That was why they made the change. They wanted to create a new culture and a new environment, and they were doing that deliberately. And the thing, and I'll touch on a couple things that I thought were interesting, both on the impact that it had on the employees and then also on the executive team. From the employees' perspective, it just took a really long time, for them to even believe that the change was real. I think that's one thing that if you're going to be making any changes like this in an organization, you have to realize that the change itself is like 10% of the work, right? It's what are you going to do for the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to continually beat the drum and have a consistent message of this is what we're doing, this is the new direction, these are the new processes. Because the number, I mean, the most con when I first got brought in, that I would just always hear, the number one phrase is, well, this is what always happened before, or this is the way things used to be. And it just takes a really long time to steer any kind of cultural ship. And then from the executive team's perspective, the thing that I noticed is honestly a lot of frustration in that. And because it takes so long, and from their perspective, they were saying like, look, we've been saying this new stuff. We've been doing things differently for a year now, and people still don't trust us. Like, what do we have to do? And so I think, from so then from the so from the employee side, kind of really embracing that change and being open to it, and then on the executive side, realizing that there's often not a lot of openness, and it's just going to take a lot of time for that change to happen. That's at least what I've seen in one of my examples that I've gotten to work with. Seiko, what have you seen?
Well, one quick question on that is, Matt, do you, when you're looking at the situation you just described, is the most effective method, obviously broad messaging is going to be important, right? But to get like limited new directives embodied by kind of each layer of leadership rolling down. So you're receiving information not just from a new person who's coming in, but from trusted leadership. Is that kind of the structure that you advise there, or?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think about it like any change management initiative, right? And communication is such a big part of that. And yeah, I think having different messaging strategies for each population, and you want to classify those populations in different ways depending on how they're going to be impacted by the change. And so there is a level of that where it's just like all employ like everybody in the organization needs to get a particular kind of message. But I think you need to ask yourself of, okay, so for our mid-level managers, like what do we want them to do differently? What do they need to know about this? How are they going to be impacted by this? And so just thinking about the different populations and taking a minute to think through what are the impacts are going to be to them? How do we want them to behave differently? What's the messaging going to be for them? And I think, the specifics of that are obviously going to be really particular to what the kind of change that you're enacting, why there is a new leader, what this new leader is planning on doing. But the more you can think about that, just those bigger picture questions of who are the different groups of people? What do we want them to do differently? How are they going to be impacted? I think is really important.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I studied psychology in school, and it was my first love, and specifically industrial organizational psychology, kind of how humans work in organizations, right? It's like there's almost nothing more fun to study. And a lot of what you both have spoken to already, I think is really important for us to kind of pause and look at, which is we can look at business, we can look at the numbers, we can look at logic, and all of that matters. But from my biased perspective, almost nothing matters as much as the psychology and the situation and the nuance of the human dynamics that are going into the situation. So I'm reflecting on a specific example where a CEO was ousted, and I think that in this specific example, I'm not going to give specifics, but identifiers. But in this specific example, the CEO was beloved by many of the organization, and the way that the transition happened was abrasive to many teammates, and it ended up making a much rougher waters than it could have been if it was handled with kind of you know, nurturing the love that was had, right? And coming at it from, probably would have taken longer and required more sensitivity, but may have led to a better outcome than it did.
I really want to touch on that point about, just because I think it really highlights, you know, the different populations. It's not just like the different populations that are coming, but the different populations of what people are going to think about the change. Are they for or are they against? And making sure that it isn't just like, well, if they're against, then you're wrong. Because you can believe that, but it's not going to help your case at all. And so I think that's a really great point. If some people are, no matter what the situation is, the old leader going out, chances are there is a population that did like that leader.
And this may be a little too cold, but I'll say it anyway. I have a lot of love for people, but I'm going to say it anyway. If like, you need to understand who is going to disagree with your direction, and know that you may lose them, and make that decision thoughtfully, right? So it's not that losing people is necessarily going to be bad. You just want to make sure that you know, make the decision and then see the pieces fall where they may, as opposed to making the decision and going, oh, hope it turns out the way I want.
Yeah.
So I've heard four, I think, key impacts of this transition based on both of your observations, and then, you know, all that align sort of with the notes that I had also. And so at a high level, there's going to be a shift in vision and strategic direction. Like, the founders were the visionaries, like, you know, somebody else is coming in. There is going to be a significant change, right? So at the core of the business, that's going to happen. As a result, then there's going to be a cultural recalibration, right? So some of the founders' personality and values were deeply ingrained. Like, some of that's really important to stay, right? But you're also under a new sort of direction. And so some of that will have to be rebuilt. Operational disruption. You know, oftentimes there's a lot of like key relationships that, you know, that founder, the CEO had with some of the biggest customers, with some of your strategic partners. Things are going to slow down during this period of time, right? Because there's going to be a lot of uncertainty and you're going to have to navigate it. And as a result of all of that sort of people change and abstract change that's happening, team morale and retention is also going to be heavily impacted, right? And it's very likely that a number of people will opt out or, you know, not be a fit for this new direction. And so, you know, there's going to be a thinning of the ranks as a result, as you realign to the new direction. And so I think that that does create real opportunities for existing folks within the organization to be able to step up, and who can see a path in terms of leadership and influence and management to help, you know, take the helm and really have a career defining moment to actually shape where the company's going and sort of accelerate their own trajectory. And so I'd love to get your take, you know, just on that. Where do you see opportunities potentially, and what are some things that folks might be, you know, thinking about in all of that uncertainty?
And one thing before I get to that, I did want to highlight something that just that came to mind as you were going through those points, because, you know, I think we've talked a lot about change management. And I think one of the things to realize about this particular change is that almost always it's going to be reactive change management. And that's a key difference. You know, like, a lot of times when you think about change, you're trying to be proactive. And just the nature of this kind of change means that for the majority of people, it's going to be pretty reactive, most likely. But then back to your question about, you know, where does this create opportunity? I think that creates the opportunity for the employee to really go with the change. I mean, I do think we need to, just Seika, like you pointed out, the company needs to thoughtfully think through, we might lose some talent, but we're still going to make this change. I think an individual should, especially if it's a really big change, should take a minute to think about that, of, you know, with this new direction, do I want to go with it or not? And then if you don't, then get out. Like, it's going to be bad for you. It's going to be bad for the organization. Don't hang out just to complain. But if you are, go for it. And I think there's tremendous opportunity for people who, in the beginning, give the change the benefit of the doubt, give the new leader the benefit of the doubt, and say, like, let's believe everything that's being said. Let's believe this new idea, and at least for now, suspend judgment, go with it, really embrace it. You can always, you know, change your mind if the facts on the ground say, oh, actually they're still not meaning this change that they said they were going to do. But I think in the beginning there's a lot of opportunity for employees who are willing to kind of, you know, suspend that judgment for now and really go with the change.
Yeah, linking two thoughts here. One is a common thread that I think has come up in our conversations is the power of understanding what you want, clarity in communicating what you want, and being willing to opt out if it is not for you. And those sound a lot easier than they are in the human experience, right? But that is true on both sides of, you know, every hiring conversation that we're having. It's on both sides of new leadership coming in and the organization making the decision, right? Leadership needs to be clear, like you were talking about, Matt, of giving the cultural and operational new message and then pounding that drum for a long period because it's going to take a while for the organization to adopt. And as you were just saying, for the team, as they're taking on this new information, to decide, yes, that is for me, or no, it's not, and making that decision quickly. And that makes a lot of sense. And one other item I think is useful to mention, kind of to your first point, was in that you hear often that, wow, I've been saying this for a year. How long is it going to really get people to kind of get in motion with all of this? Another key point I think that's important to look at here is wanting to ensure that there is stability of that message, which means having multiple changes of significant leadership positions in any sort of relatively near term period is a really dangerous game to play, and to be this information is kind of all adding on itself. It's going to take a while to get people to march to the beat of the new beat of this drum. And if we keep introducing new beats and new music, getting people to figure out how to move together is going to be very complicated.
Yeah.
I think there's a really important point that builds on that, Seiko, which is, you know, we've been sitting on this like clarity of direction. And so, you know, senior leadership coming in needs to make it very clear this is the vision, but they need to create space then for the managers, you know, on the business side, the engineering side of the house, to work collaboratively to actually figure out how that looks when it's going to be implemented. Because the team, you know, at the fundamental level, you know, of individual contributors across the organization, they're going to need reassurance around what's happening, why it's happening. If that all happens, you know, at the top without sort of the ability to connect it to where the team's currently at, it's going to get lost, right? And I think you're going to lose morale, and it's going to have a real big impact on it. And so there is a role, I think, for the existing team to work collaboratively with the new incoming team to translate the big vision into, like, you know, day-to-day execution. And so, you know, and hopefully that can help maintain some of the motivation, you know, required to keep people rowing in the right direction. I really also like how clear you were, you know, with saying what is needed, you know, at a personal level when this change happens, you know, understanding what you individually want out of a job, you know, communicating that, and then opting out if it's not, because, you know, what Matt was saying as well, like, there is no point in lingering and, you know, just sort of complaining about a situation or trying to disrupt the change that's happening. It's going to happen, right? And it's like, do you want to be a part of it or not? No problem if you don't, like, but you need to be clear about that. So, well, great. You know, was there anything else that you thought was worth diving through? I've got a couple other sort of key lessons that I think are helpful, but communication and consistency in communication is something we've already really, really honed in on. There's two others that were top of mind for me, which is, since we talked about how important that culture was, you know, from a founder and how much they define the organization and set the vision, like honoring that founding legacy while establishing a new path is super hard. And I've seen it done really well within a portfolio company of ours with new leadership coming in. This was a welcome change from the founding CEO bringing in sort of, the right type of operational experience to take the company to a new level. And this new, CEO did an incredible job, taking the whole team, doing offsites, like honoring the work that they had done, letting, sort of stories be shine on, some of the hardships that they overcame to get to that point. And then working with, the founders and some of the existing leaders of the company, to help articulate and drive the vision forward. And so not that CEO, like, saying this is how it will be, but, working with other key team members that had trust, that had confidence, that had, and most importantly, trust with the existing team to sort of set that direction. So that one was one that I think is a little bit harder. And then the other is this idea of like elevating and empowering sort of the next generation of leaders. You can't hire it all out outside. You have to bring people that are internal up and give them sort of a new growth opportunity because they're the bridge between the existing cultural paradigm and the one you're trying to build. So those were two sort of additional key takeaways. Any thoughts there?
I just on that last point that you made, I've definitely seen it inside organizations where, that are growing pretty quickly. And we've touched on this in previous episodes where it's this idea of you kind of hire somebody to the first person in a position and you make it sound like, it's those classic head of positions where maybe they're not quite ready, but yeah, I mean, having a plan to develop them so that they can stay head of is really impactful because if their leader leaves and they don't move up, then it can be really impactful for them.
Yeah, and just that there are opportunities as the company is restabilizing, finding their footing, marching to the beat of the new beat of this drum, identifying key teammates that are that are vital for the new direction of the organization and tapping
That's
into
really smart.
what development and growth they want to see and ensuring that they feel brought along and well nurtured in the transition.
Well, this was a great conversation. I think we touched on a lot of, important takeaways. I think transitions like this they're tough, they're scary. People will be impacted and they'll lose their jobs by opting out or, change happening. But it does create an incredible opportunity and a new direction. And, key team members have the opportunity to rise up and help sort of build that, and help take, that change and make it real. So, this was a fun conversation. Thanks for your perspectives.
Yeah, great question. Great, great
That was
conversation.
good.